It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, a guest tells us that pop culture doesn't always give hyper-competent female characters a fair shake. They're usually sidekicks, not the heroes. First, it's been a rocky year for the faculty and academic staff of the University of Wisconsin system. The university's tenure system has been changed, and budget cuts have further strained UW schools. Last night, the UW-Madison Faculty Senate met to vote on a no-confidence resolution to challenge UW President Ray Cross and the Board of Regents.
We are ready to vote on the resolution. By my count, we have 21 whereases and two resolves. And all of those in favor of this resolution indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? The ayes have it, and the resolution passes.
But what does this no-confidence vote accomplish? Where does the debate go from here? Joining us now to talk about last night's no-confidence vote is Nico Savage. He covers higher education at the Wisconsin State Journal. Nico, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we just heard UW-Madison Chancellor Rebecca Blank and that vote at the Faculty Senate. Can you explain what this no-confidence vote is?
Sure. So a faculty member brought this resolution. It lists a litany of problems that faculty members have with UW System President Ray Cross and the UW Board of Regents, mostly surrounding the new tenure policies that the Regents approved earlier this spring. It ends by essentially saying that the changes to tenure have weakened the UW faculty's ability to improve the lives of Wisconsin residents, because it's hurting their ability to do the sort of risky or controversial research that could ultimately help the citizens of the state. And then it says that their actions have diminished the quality of the institution. So it states that the faculty at UW-Madison have no confidence in the commitment of President Cross, the Board of Regents, to the Wisconsin idea, this cherished outreach mission of the University of Wisconsin system. And it also calls on them to calls on Cross and the Regents to kind of recommit themselves to fighting for that idea and for the system.
What kind of arguments back and forth did we hear from faculty on this issue leading up to that vote?
Well, so you certainly did not hear at yesterday's meeting any faculty who said that they thought that Ray Cross or the Board of Regents have done the job that they want to see them do. Cross and the Regents have not been very popular with the faculty for a number of reasons. Many faculty see them as being too closely tied or aligned to Governor Scott Walker and Republicans in the legislature. Many of them are concerned that they didn't fight essentially hard enough to avoid hundreds of millions of dollars in state budget cuts in the most recent state budget. So there's a lot of faculty dissatisfaction, but the question, the heart of the discussion yesterday at the Faculty Senate was essentially, do you go so far as to say you have no confidence in them as leaders? There was a motion to essentially strip that no confidence statement out of the resolution, but that was voted down by the faculty senators. And the reason why professors wanted to potentially strip that out of the resolution was that they said it doesn't really accomplish anything. They say that, you know, a no confidence vote is a symbolic step. It's a significant one, but ultimately symbolic. And they argued it would essentially do more harm than good, that it could lead to a backlash from politicians and from the people of Wisconsin, who people were concerned would just see this as professors whining. But that didn't convince the faculty members, and they decided to keep it in.
Yeah, one of the people who testified last night was Daniel Vimont. He's an associate professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at the UW-Madison. Here's what he had to say about that whining concern.
It's more than just us whining about tenure. It's not that at all. It's about what makes Wisconsin special, what makes the University of Wisconsin special, what makes this state special. When that is being broken, we have to stand up against it.
That's the message that a lot of the faculty seem to be sending there. But is the perception from regents, from the system president, and maybe most importantly from the legislature that, well, yeah, they are whining?
Well, certainly regents have pushed back against this. Regent President Regina Milner releasing a statement after the vote last night saying that the regents do have confidence in Ray Cross, and also defending the changes that they made to tenure. They essentially said that the board put in place, and I'm quoting Regent President Milner, very reasonable and fair tenure and layoff policies that they say bring an enhanced degree of accountability. We've also heard from Republican legislators that they've criticized UW professors for taking this step. So certainly from the regents, they are saying that the faculty have overreacted to those changes. Remains to be seen what the result of that could be.
Talking to Nico Savage from the Wisconsin State Journal about last night's vote of no confidence by the UW-Madison Faculty Senate. And Nico, that's Madison. Are other campuses, are faculty at other campuses looking at doing similar things?
Yes, there are several campuses where you've got faculty considering very similar resolutions that would declare no confidence in these UW system leaders. I know UW-Milwaukee is, several other campuses across the state. And that was something that was brought up several times at this meeting last night. You had basically people saying the eyes of the state are on us right now. People at other smaller UW system schools that are going to be more hurt potentially than UW-Madison is by these budget cuts, and where faculty are potentially more at risk than UW-Madison faculty are of layoffs and that sort of thing. Their eyes are on UW-Madison. There was the desire for faculty at Madison to kind of stand up and send that strong message in hopes that it can encourage others across the state to do so.
There's been a war of words and in some cases actions between some Republicans in the state legislature and the UW system, UW faculty in particular. Is there a sense that somebody in UW system president Ray Cross's position really stuck in the middle here?
That's definitely something that that Cross was kind of getting at in a statement that he put out. He was basically saying that, look, it's my job as the UW system president to work with everyone, to work with faculty members, and to work with state legislators. There's been this criticism, particularly among faculty, that UW officials, including Ray Cross, have kind of soft-pedaled their complaints with the state legislature, and that they've been, either unwilling or afraid to more aggressively state the UW system's case. Now, what UW system officials say is that they're working they are working more behind the scenes. They're trying to establish these relationships with legislators, and that they're but to faculty, they're seeing that as not being willing to rock the boat. Cross, though, is saying, look, I've got to work with everybody here.
So UW-Madison faculty passed this thing last night. They're kind of watching other system schools to see if faculty there do the same. Is there a sense of a next step from the UW-Madison faculty who did this? Do they have, because this is, in effect, a symbolic action. It doesn't change anything practically.
You're correct. We didn't really hear much in the way of next steps, but you're right. I mean, it is ultimately a symbolic action. Faculty can't appoint new regents or appoint a new system president or anything like that. But I think certainly for the faculty, this was there was a desire that was stated there to kind of try to change the narrative so it's not driven by the idea of faculty, just sort of absorbing things they don't like, such as tenure changes, such as budget cuts. They want to kind of more assertively go out and state that they do good things for the people of Wisconsin and that they deserve these tenure protections.
One concern that's been brought up is that there's a fear that faculty might start either leaving Wisconsin
Yep.
system schools or be less likely to be recruited successfully by the UW system. Is that something that was brought up last night?
There was. On the issue of retention, several comments were made there, and we have seen an increase in the number of retention cases, basically other universities trying to draw away UW-Madison faculty and the university having to kind of play defense and protect those faculty. That was brought up. The author of the resolution, a sociology professor named Chad Goldberg, he mentioned yesterday that he hopes that this no-confidence vote will actually be a positive message to people who are considering coming to UW-Madison, basically that it gives them the message that the faculty here are still engaged and are still fighting for what they believe in.
Nico, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you.
That's Nico Savage. He covers higher education for the Wisconsin State Journal. He joins to talk about the no-confidence vote cast last night by UW-Madison's Faculty Senate. I'd also like to thank WPR reporter Parth Shah, who provided some of the audio from that vote. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, North Carolina sparked a national conversation over bathroom laws and transgender identity. We'll hear from a Wisconsin lawmaker who says he wants to bring similar legislation here to the state. Right now, let's turn our attention to a whip-smart British woman with a best friend who's one of the most celebrated wizards of our time, Hermione Granger.
Wingardium Leviosa. Stop. You're going to take someone's eye out. Besides, you're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
She's a character known for her smarts and for saving the lives of her friends in the Harry Potter books, but Hermione Granger remains a faithful sidekick instead of the hero throughout the series. Our next guest wrote an article about Hermione and similar characters in pop culture. She writes, "Every semi-competent male hero has a more talented female sidekick. Why isn't she the hero instead?" Joining us now is Constance Grady. She writes about pop culture for Vox.com. Constance, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So how common is this story? The super competent, powerful female character, but the more schleppy male character is the hero.
It's extremely common, I think, especially in action franchises. If you look at movies, Marvel movies like Guardians of the Galaxy or Ant-Man, you know, you have the very, very competent lady sidekick and the kind of everyman hero. Or something even older like the Inspector Gadget cartoons, where the joke of that cartoon is that Inspector Gadget can't actually get anything done, and his niece, who is a little girl, is the one who really does all the work, and then Inspector Gadget gets the credit for it. It's something that shows up again and again across basically all our storytelling.
Well, let's get another example, a highly competent woman, sidekick, and ultimately love interest, spoiler alert, instead of a hero. Let's hear from Trinity in The Matrix.
So Trinity gets...
My name is Trinity.
Trinity. The Trinity that cracked the IRSD base.
That was a long time ago.
Jesus.
What?
I just thought, you were a guy.
Most guys do.
So you write, Constance, there's actually this concept of the Trinity Syndrome, inspired by Trinity from The Matrix. Tell us about what that means.
Right. So that was the term Trinity Syndrome was coined by the film critic Tasha Robinson in this very brilliant article that I recommend everyone read. And essentially what it says is that there's a very popular trope in movies to introduce a female character and have her come out super impressive. You know, she'll like backflip off a motorcycle and knock out a bad guy. And you sort of think, wow, you know, this woman can get things done. And then her job for the rest of the movie is to get captured and tortured and be someone that the hero has to save. She's the incredibly competent woman who is never again allowed to be as exciting or capable as she is in her introduction.
The Lego movie, you point out, as a pretty much a solid copy of that Trinity Syndrome.
Exactly right. You have Wildstyle, who comes out in this blaze of action and gets everything done. And then towards the end of the movie, the main character, Emmett, sort of tunes her out and replaces her voice with the words, blah, 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 I'm so pretty, because that's what she's there to be, really, at the end of the day.
Talking to Constance Grady from Vox.com, she says, why isn't the super competent female character in the movie or the book or the TV show the hero instead of, as they usually are, she writes, the sidekick? So why? Why do we keep seeing the story told this way, Constance?
Well, I think in a lot of ways it's an attempt to sort of get halfway to feminism, because we all know, right, that you don't want your leading lady to be a damsel in distress. She shouldn't be someone who can't take care of herself. So we try to make her better than the hero even, really, really capable of taking care of herself and getting things done on her own. But at the same time, we're not really comfortable writing that woman into the role as a hero very often. We have sort of started to figure out that we should be telling stories about more people than just straight white cis men. but we haven't really made our peace with the idea of making other people heroes. So the hero slot is sort of filled by the straight white cis man, and then everyone else is relegated to the sidekick position. So what that means is, because we know that women should exist and that they should be able to take care of things on their own, you have this really capable woman in your story. But because we don't want her to be the hero, at the end of the day, she can't actually accomplish anything on her own. She needs the hero to do it for her.
And you write that it's not such a big deal if it's a story here or there, just one movie or one TV show, but you keep seeing it again and again. And that's where you start to worry, that it's a theme that comes up again and again.
Exactly, exactly. I think a lot of times in the individual story, it's pretty well justified within the narrative and the mythology why the hero has to be the hero and the sidekick has to be the sidekick. Or a lot of times the story is like a deconstruction of the heroic chosen one trope. So it's really important that the hero not be very good at everything. That's something you see in stories like The Magicians or a little bit in the Lego movie. But the fact is, this pattern keeps repeating over and over and over again. And when the pattern comes up so many times, you start to get this message, which I don't think is a message that any of these storytellers intend to send, but it says that no matter how accomplished a woman might be and no matter how hard she works, she is still not going to be as effective as her less accomplished male friends are.
Now, I see counterexamples, and a lot of these, as I think about it, are coming out of, the YA novel and novel-to-movie world. Katniss mm-hmm. Everdeen from The Hunger Games, the hero of Divergent, other things mm-hmm. along those lines. Do you see that as a step in the right direction?
I think it's great that we have more stories now with really strong, interesting female characters. What I think is interesting is that characters like Katniss, who are such great heroines, have to be really, really good at their job of saving the world in order for us to take them seriously as heroes. You don't really see a kind of clumsy everyman hero. You don't really see that trope happening with women. It's as if we can see someone fumbling around and not really be sure of what they're doing, like, for instance, Emma in the Lego movies or Harry and Harry Potter, and we're still willing to consider that character heroic if they're a guy. But we don't really seem to be willing to do that if they're a girl. For a girl to be an action hero, she basically has to be completely deadly.
Well, I wonder what you're thinking about the upcoming Ghostbusters reboot with all female characters in the lead, because if it's based on the original, these are definitely flawed heroes, heroines, whatever. Do you think that might be a nice counterpoint to what you're saying?
I absolutely do. I'm really excited for that movie. I think comedy is one of the areas where we're starting to be allow women to fail and be incompetent and still consider them worthy of storytelling in the way that we've done with men for a very long time. You know, shows like Broad City and Girls and movies like Bridesmaids have been excellent at creating representation for incompetent women or semi-competent women in a way that guys have always had. And I think action comedy is going to be the place where we can really start to see alternatives to the hyper-competent lady sidekick trope.
Well, getting back to straight-up action, one argument I've seen is if we just have more women characters, then authors, writers won't have to feel like that one woman carries the weight for all female characters. There'll be more room for variety. One can be the super competent one can be the schlubby, bumbling one, and there's room for all of them as long as there isn't, just one female character, say, I don't know, in the Avengers.
I absolutely agree with that. I think that one of the problems that has sort of arisen with the tokenism model of storytelling, where you have, one woman and one black guy and one gay guy, is that a disproportionate pressure is placed on that character to represent everyone in their category and we don't just allow them to be themselves, which is a privilege that we kind of automatically give straight white men in our storytelling. So I think definitely the best solution to this problem is to just keep writing about all different kinds of people, and sort of, and that's the only way we'll have the freedom to let those characters stand for themselves instead of standing for an entire group.
As we wrap up, Constance, one other example you gave was the original Star Wars movie, Princess Leia, very competent, more so than Luke Skywalker, but the one who has to be saved isn't the one making the journey. Now we've got this new Star Wars movie where it seems like the main hero's journey, at least based on the first one in the series, is the female lead. And of course, mm-hmm. Princess Leia is now General Leia. What do you make of that change?
I think that's so exciting. I think that the new Star Wars movies have really started to go a long way towards repairing this trope. And I think what's really interesting to me is the amount of backlash that you see against it. You know, there are all of these angry men online writing about how Star Wars doesn't have to be feminist and not everything has to be feminist, because the idea that this story of an everyman who sort of learns and grows and develops and becomes a great hero could belong to a woman strikes people as such an aberration that it actually offends them. And I think that we really just have to keep making that story more and more common until it becomes completely commonplace.
Constance, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
That's Constance Grady. She writes about pop culture for Vox.com. Coming up after the news, both sides of a debate over a state bathroom proposal similar to the one in North Carolina. I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Veronica Rickert is out today. Coming up, if you're low income in the United States, where you live can either help you live longer or could shorten your life. We'll learn more about some new research on that in just a bit. First, a state lawmaker has renewed his push for a bill that would create a statewide standard on gender-specific bathrooms and changing rooms facilities in Wisconsin schools. Representative Jesse Kramer introduced the bill originally during the last legislative session. It didn't make it to the governor's desk before the end of that session. With the recent national conversation about a similar law in North Carolina, the issue has become a major controversy. Representative Kramer recently released a statement on why he thinks the bill is important. You can weigh in, too, at 800-642-1234. Are you for or against a bill that would require a person to use a public bathroom, or in this case a school bathroom, based on their gender assigned at birth? Why? Why not? And what do you think of the national response to North Carolina's bill? Call 800-642-1234. Jesse Kramer joins us now. He's a Republican state representative from Kewaskum. Representative Kramer, welcome back to the show.
Good afternoon, Rob.
Well, can you remind us of the details of your bill? What would it do?
Absolutely. So the reason we made this bill to public schools initially was because that was where we were seeing the issues in Wisconsin. Public schools today have policies all over the map. So what the bill did was it basically stated that if you have a sex-specific locker room, changing room, bathroom, where multiple students are using it at a time, they would have to remain sex-specific. So if you're a male, you're using the male. If you're a female, you're using the female. What we did allow in the bill and require, actually, for school districts was if there's anyone that's uncomfortable using a facility that would typically be using, they could go to the school district. The school district would have to provide them accommodations. So that was basically the tenet of the bill and the basis for the bill and what was behind it.
And I've heard you were thinking of even expanding this beyond schools to other public facilities. Is that right?
Absolutely. I think we have finger on the pulse on this, and we kind of knew what was going going on in Wisconsin. But I think North Carolina has this right. They're making it a public facility. They're ensuring that if any taxpayer dollars are used for anything, those facilities are going to still have boundaries, and we're going to still ensure that they maintain those boundaries in society, that males use males and females use females. The biggest issue here, and the reason that I and many of my constituents are concerned about what is going on, you see what happened in Washington State earlier this year. They basically blew the doors wide open. They specifically said anyone in Washington State can use any bathroom, changing room, locker room that they want to based on how they feel. And the problem with that is you could have, I could take my daughters and my neighbor take his daughters. We could go to an open swim at the local high school. We send our daughters into the girls' room to change, put, get their swimming suits on to go swimming. There might be a 30-year-old guy in there changing right next to them. They come out and tell us, he may have exposed himself to them, who knows what. They come out and tell us, we call the police. What are the police going to do in this situation now? We have been passing laws in Wisconsin, bipartisan laws, to protect women and children. We made upskirting a felony last session. We made it a crime that any parent who videotapes their children in various states of undress and uses it for sexual gratification or commercial means, that's now a crime. We passed a leashes law. We provided funding for the Attorney General to be able to much more easily track down people who are trafficking pornography, child pornography online. But at the same time, we're going to turn a blind eye to this, because when that police officer shows up in that locker room, and anyone can change in any facility they want, based on what they say they are, they think they are, they tell the police officer they are, if he puts handcuffs on them, he's going to get sued. In the meantime, this individual has exposed themselves to some children, which would have been sexual harassment, indecent exposure, probably disorderly conduct, just as recently as last week. And now, so when you blow the doors wide open to a completely sexless society, there are some major problems that we need to be aware of and be concerned with down the road.
Talking to Jesse Kramer, Republican State Representative from Kewaskum, about his proposed bathroom bill legislation on gender, who can use a bathroom or a public changing facility. You can join in at 800-642-1234. We'll go to our callers now with Jamie in Milwaukee. Jamie, hi. Jamie, are you there? Okay, Jamie wasn't listening there. We'll go next to John in Washington, D.C. John, hi.
Hi there. I'm just calling because I think it's important to set the record straight in this debate here. First of all, this is not about men going into women's bathrooms. Trans women are not men. They are women. Gender is a lot more than what you're assigned at birth and what anatomy you have. So we need to make sure that's here in this debate. But also, there is literally, proponents of these kind of laws have literally shown no evidence. There is no evidence that a trans person commits assault in a bathroom. And people don't dress up as the opposite gender to commit assault. This is a solution in search of a problem, and it's a problem that doesn't exist. So I think we need to be honest here that this problem, all this fear-mongering, is baseless, and all this measure is going to do is it's going to marginalize trans kids, marginalize trans people. That's it.
John, thanks for the call. Representative Kramer, that's been a lot of the objection, that ultimately this is right. Discriminating against transgender people.
Absolutely, and that's how it's being labeled. It's being labeled as intolerant, bigoted, hateful. But on the surface, people aren't digging into what the real problem will be. No one's saying, there have been transgender people in society forever. No one has ever denied anyone who is transgender from using a bathroom or a changing room. The problem is people are going to take advantage of the situation. I'm not saying it's going to be a transgender person. People are going to take advantage of the situation. The Charlotte law, the one that North Carolina basically did their law in response to, would allow any man, including a convicted sex offender, to access women's facilities by declaring they feel they are a female, even though they're in a male body. Do you want that person changing in front of your children? The other issue is, let's say, and this happened in Washington State, let's say a girl's swim team comes into the locker room, they're done swimming, come in to change, there's a guy in the sauna, and they say, hey, we're not comfortable changing in front of this guy. So they approach the management. Management says, oh, you're not comfortable? Well, here, you can go use this room down the hall. We are kicking you out of your safe space. We're kicking you out of the room that you should be utilizing and that you should be allowed to utilize, and we are now going to discriminate against you, a protected class of people, women who should be using the room that they are in because they do not feel comfortable changing in front of someone who has male body parts.
And John used the phrase solution in search of an issue. Charles Krauthammer, the conservative columnist, said exactly the same thing. Solution in search of an issue, saying, do we have an epidemic of transgender people being evil in bathrooms and hypothetical
not.
Problems?
Right. No, we don't. That's not the problem, though. The problem is that there are going to be people who take advantage of the situation. I don't know if you saw, but this morning, UW-Milwaukee finally had a story on this. This popped up this morning. There was an individual, a man, who was in the women's locker room last night. Some women complained to him. They said, "Do you know you're in the women's locker room?" He said, "Absolutely. I feel like I'm a woman." They went and complained to the school, and they don't know what to do now. So this is happening in Milwaukee now, right down the road. And they are basically, this is pretty funny, actually. So they're proposing a policy. They're working on a policy now. They're proposing a policy that states that people using facilities of a gender other than the one that they were born would have to cover the genitalia in the presence of others. Well, that's not entirely the problem, because if you have a sex offender in there or a pervert, who cares if he's covering his genitals? He's looking at yours. Why should, once again, the women and children who we should be trying to protect in society be subjected to that?
I'm going to bring on one more caller. Shannon is on the line in Franklin. Shannon, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Very interesting topic. I was recently a resident of Charlotte, North Carolina, and moved back to Wisconsin. And bringing the safety point to this, just as being a mom, we had a picture of our daughter, and it was developed at a local box store. When I went to get my pictures, I was confronted by security, and they took my pictures away, and they said if I were to bring any pictures again like that in, they would be calling the police on me. So going along with the safety thing, she's now an 8-year-old who takes swimming lessons, and I kind of have to go along with your guest. You know, I have her go into the changing room. Do I want a 30 or 40-year-old male in there naked with her? I'm very open. I have transgender friends. I'm just trying to find out where the safety line ends.
Gotcha, Shannon. Representative Kramer, as we wrap up, is this something you're hearing from your constituents?
It is, Rob. And I find it very hypocritical. The bill that we put out this year provided protections for everyone. As I mentioned, we provided accommodations for anyone, whether they're bullied, whether they're an individual who doesn't feel that they're in the right room. They can go to the school district and get some accommodations. I find it is very, very intolerant. That these same people who only care about themselves and their own personal feeling care nothing for the people around them. This bill addressed everyone. The North Carolina bill addresses everyone. The problem is the media and the other side of the aisle are not talking about that.
Representative Kramer, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Rob.
That's State Representative Jesse Kramer talking about a bathroom and gender bill he plans to reintroduce to the legislature in the coming session. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're talking right now about the national conversation taking place over gender and bathrooms, other public facilities, after a controversial law passed in North Carolina. We just heard from State Representative Jesse Kramer, who said he would reintroduce a similar bill to the Wisconsin legislature during the coming session. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something Wisconsin needs? 800-642-1234. We just heard from Representative Kramer about his support for this bill, his authorship of it. Now we hear from a representative from a statewide LGBT advocacy group making the case against it. Megan McDonald is with us. She's executive director of Fair Wisconsin. Megan, thanks for joining us today.
Hi, thanks.
So why is Fair Wisconsin opposed to this kind of legislation?
Well, first of all, the original bill was really just an unnecessary solution in search of a problem. Over 60 school districts in Wisconsin have already worked on modernizing their policies to create safe spaces for all of the students and to, best suit their local learning environment. And this really was unnecessary interference with that. I think when Representative Kramer mentioned seeing issues in the schools, there really haven't been incidents in schools where transgender people, having their rights protected in restrooms has increased in any assaults or safety incidents or anything like that. I think issues in the schools might be referring to it getting greater attention as school districts are, you know, coming up with their own customized policies that address their local needs, but it's really just not necessary. Secondly, it really actually singles out and stigmatizes and even potentially victimizes trans and gender nonconforming youth in the schools, particularly transgender girls. The original bill encouraged individuals to monitor restroom use and can actually really exacerbate harassment that can already exist in the schools. So the original bill that we expect to return, you know, it's unnecessary. It doesn't make bathrooms any safer, and it actually has the potential for great harm for some of our more vulnerable students.
Representative Kramer was just telling us this isn't really about transgender individuals. He's worried about predators or exhibitionists of some sort taking advantage of these bathroom policies to men, he's saying, go into women's bathrooms, girls' bathrooms, and not having a legal reason to arrest them for it. That's his worry. Is that a concern you share?
I don't. Everybody cares about safety and privacy in restrooms, changing rooms, you know, public places in general. I'm a mom. I have two daughters. They're 9 and 11. But laws like this, whether you're talking about North Carolina that is, you know, taking away local efforts to make, you know, things better, they don't make restrooms any safer. It's already illegal for any person with any excuse to go into a restroom to harm or harass or intimidate another person. Sexual harassment, indecent exposure, disorderly conduct, all those things that Representative Kramer mentioned, those are already illegal. Whether you're pretending to be someone you're not, or you just go in there, whether you're in the restroom that does align with your gender identity or biological sex, whether you're a trans person or not, those acts are already illegal, and laws like this do not make those laws any stronger. What they do, laws like this, the student bill that Representative Kramer proposed, or the North Carolina bill, or Mississippi's new law, they essentially single out and target trans people. They equate the trans community with predators, and they just don't make bathrooms any safer. We need to be focusing on the illegal behaviors that are, like I said, they're already illegal. And those acts, regardless of who is trying to, you know, commit those acts or where or what excuse they might use. So I really think it's kind of a hollow argument to say that someone might suddenly try to take advantage of this new law and claim to be a trans person when they're not. The more important issue is what they're doing and what their behavior is. A trans person who wants to just simply use a restroom, change their clothes, you know, and be left in peace, that behavior is not the same.
Talking to Megan McDonald from Fair, Wisconsin, looking at a proposed transgender law or a bathroom bill related to gender. She's saying it discriminates ultimately against transgender students here in Wisconsin. We heard from a Republican author of legislation just a few moments ago. We'll go to our callers now with John in Beloit. John, hi, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I kind of look at it really common sense. We don't ask Catholics to say, hey, I want to go in a synagogue, and people who are Jewish don't want to go into a mosque. If you got mechanical body parts that say you're a boy, you go in the boys. If you got mechanical body parts that say you're a girl, you go in the girls. It has nothing really to do with how people really want to associate themselves. These are personal feelings. They should be left out of the fray. And if your feelings are hurt in America, the best thing about America is we can always go somewhere else and go with our group and be with our group in other places. Now, they're going to say this about public restrooms. Well, that's fine. If you have mechanical parts, you go in that restroom and you're good.
John, thanks for the call. I want to bring Megan McDonald in. What do you say to John?
I'm not really sure how how I would know what someone's, what their anatomy was. In a restroom. So, I mean, really it's about letting people use a facility that aligns with their gender identity and have the, you know, be afforded the dignity to, you know, be able to go about their regular daily lives in peace just like anyone else and not be harassed or threatened or intimidated because of who they are. Like I said, there's Representative Kramer sort of puts forth a lot of these incidents and scary hypothetical examples of, you know, harassment or sexual harassment or assault that just, they're not real examples. These incidents haven't happened. It's hypothetical examples. And secondly, like I said before, the behavior is already illegal. And so if someone were harassing another person in a restroom and the police were called, the police would be able to take action regardless of who that person was or why they said they were in a particular place. So,
Megan, as we start to wrap up, what would be an effective, let's focus in on a school for a moment. What would you like to see as an effective policy that meets everyone's needs for a school?
Well, generally, ideal policies would have a number of types of facilities available so that for whatever reason, anybody could have, if they wanted additional, you know, privacy or security, whether they're a trans person or non-trans or, you know, maybe a person with a disability or, you know, for any reason, they could have a private facility. There could also be, you know, options of all gender or unisex, multi-person facilities, et cetera, having a variety that are equally accessible to, you know, all students or all, whether it's in a school or in a public place, you know, equally accessible to everybody would be great. And as far as policy, like not policing who's using that, just allowing people to use the facility that they feel comfortable in and aligns with their gender identity and, you know, and just simply allowing people to go about their business in peace. And again, if there are concerns about or when there are concerns about a person's behavior in any of those facilities, the behavior is the focus, not the identity or gender presentation of the individual person.
Megan, thanks for joining us today. That was Megan McDonnell, Executive Director of FAIR Wisconsin, talking about her opposition to recent talks of gender-specific bathroom legislation in Wisconsin. Just a few moments ago, we heard from State Representative Jesse Kramer, who's the author of legislation. Astronomers keep discovering more and more planets in other solar systems, but a lot of the early planets on the list were just not good candidates for supporting life. They were too big, too close to the sun, too hot, that kind of thing. But we are getting closer to finding that sweet spot. By we, I mean humanity, as represented by, you know, astronomers. Belgian astronomers announced this week that they had discovered three new planets in just one solar system, about 40 light years away. So that's really close. In galactic terms, in human terms, it's really, really far away. Here's the deal. Two of these planets, they're super close to the star, whipping around it in just a couple of days. The other one will just a little further out. So too close, right? But they say it's an ultra-cool star, meaning not that it's awesome and super hip, but that it's cold as suns go and small too. Plus, these three planets are all roughly Earth-sized. So put it all together. The scientists say these planets could be at the right temperature for liquid water, which you need for life, as we understand it, could have friendly gravity, have a stable star, so maybe they could support life. No answers yet, but it gives a good place to point some of our fanciest telescopes and to start working on those faster-than-light spaceship drives from the science fiction world, Warp 9 and all that, so we could visit maybe even in our lifetimes. Not holding my breath, but it's still cool to hear about. Stick around, more to come on Central Time.